Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michelle Price, and you're listening to the Online Thought Leader Salon, where our mantra is connectivity is the new currency. Connecting with others through the World Wide Web is something I believe I was destined to do, but more importantly, what you were destined to do. Beyond creating a brand, beyond creating a message, creating a conversation platform, and not just any conversation platform, but one that positions you as an original thinker. So here we are now, where women and other leading edge thinkers come to experience those who are building conversation platforms of influence on the social web using blogs, social media, online communities, and discover how they can do the same thing. Today, I'm beyond honored to have as my guest Jay Maharjan. He's the author of Winning Lessons for Entrepreneurs in the Conceptual Economy. Jay was mentored by Peter Drucker, the legendary management guru who coined the word knowledge worker, and he's currently a region champion for Startup America Partnership, the White House initiative designed to foster entrepreneurship, and he's a champion for much more, I'm sure. Jay, welcome. Jay, you there? Hi, Jay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now, Jay?
Yes, Michelle. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Good.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
It's an honor to be on your show today. Well, thanks. You know, yeah. I want to dive right in because we don't have that much time, and this idea that there is a conceptual economy is quite fascinating to me, having followed both the knowledge economy, you know, the networked economy, the relationship economy, and now there's a conceptual economy. And so I'm really interested to find out from you, what's the thinking behind the conceptual economy? What was your thinking behind that?
That's a great question, and that was the premise of my book. The knowledge economy saw about tremendous way the companies were formed, sustained, and scaled. We saw knowledge economy for the last 60 years. Like you mentioned earlier, Peter Drucker.
How many? How many years?
Knowledge economy. We're in probably, you know, been around for 60, 70 years now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like you mentioned in the intro, I was honored to have Peter Drucker as my mentor at the Claremont School. He pretty much single-handedly kind of brought about the concept of the knowledge economy before we had the good old knowledge economy days, especially the United States, and went through agricultural economy, and there was a famous term called industrial discipline, kind of bringing this agricultural workforce to the cubicles. You know, basically corporate America kind of emerged out of needing a structure, needing a governance to lead a growing economy, and which was great back then. When there was no structure, it was good to have anything in place governance wise. But what happened over the next 40, 50 years was basically the corporate America and corporate structure got carried away, and there was a whole aspect of anything beyond corporate governance was missed. So conceptual economy, the way I look at it, is more led by the passionate entrepreneurial leaders who have that entrepreneurial passion to see beyond corporate walls and kind of go into communities. You know, we have Downtown Project here in Las Vegas. Tony Hsieh is doing this. He built this Japo's multi-billion dollar company, and now he's kind of revitalizing the whole city, downtown Las Vegas. So So again, I think the way informal thesis I'm presenting in my book is the conceptual economy demands entrepreneurial passion along with adequate competence in business and technology. And on top of that, you really need to bring that the design way of thinking, the art aspect. That's how I have summarized the conceptual A's. You know, I present a lot of cases. My own background, I have a background in engineering, art, and business school. So
yeah, I saw that. See where you could, like, it's more of an art than a science. But really, I want to go back to something that you mentioned, because I spent 23 years in corporate America and actually some time as what they call, I guess they're calling them, you know, Six Sigma people now. Back then it was called quality management. And
yeah,
so I spent a lot of time in
healthcare. Yeah, actually, I think, you know, I read it by, I think you've been through...
I've been through what you mentioned. And what I find interesting is, are you saying, and I've actually sat in Tony's chair at Zappos. You know, we did a tour of Zappos through a conference that I went to. So I'm really familiar with Tony, too. Yeah, I have a picture in his chair. And so what I find interesting is, do you think that an entrepreneur needs to have experience inside of a corporation in order to do this, or can they come from the outside and do this with no experience inside kind of a corporate governance structure? Do you think that helps?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I mean, you can always choose to be an entrepreneur, but if you have that innate desire and, you know, the skills, if you're a kid, you start a company, that helps. You know, just having that true desire will really help you become a successful entrepreneur, and that clearly is the case in my case. That's what happened. You know, with all the degrees, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I like everything
really?
I do as an entrepreneur. So again, I think that's the same story with Tony and a lot of fellow entrepreneurial leaders. I work across the United States, Start America, Up Global. So to answer your question, I think corporate, you know, I mean, being stuck inside the corporation isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's all about the outlook. You know, a chapter I have dedicated in my book related to corporate entrepreneurs, and that sounds...
Is that intrapreneur? That's kind of intrapreneurs, right? Where you're allowed to be more entrepreneurial inside.
In 20 years back, people would laugh at that concept, right? I mean, corporate entrepreneur, you are.
Yeah, right. It's like that's like a dichotomy. That's you can't even have that.
Think you're in a corporation, you would be trained to think inside the box, right? So that was kind of the case. I mean,
that was the whole point. There was a box.
Exactly. And
yeah,
I talked to a lot of people, and they say, well, you know, they left corporations because they were asked to think inside the box, you know. And some people really didn't feel good about that. But again, more and more corporations are realizing that, you know, the whole notion of entrepreneurship and this growing trend, they can't ignore, you know. So now what they're doing is, they are joining, at least conceptually, to bring that entrepreneurial spirit within corporations. A great example is, I've been a recent champion for Start America Partnership, like you said, the White House Launch Initiative. We've done a lot of great things, 33 states. One thing I'm proud of is we recently joined forces with Startup Weekend, another grassroots initiative.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
In more than 110 countries. So the whole idea of Startup Weekend is, you know, you basically over a weekend you attend one of the events, you start a company, you find co-founders, you validate your idea, and end of 3 days you basically walk away with a working model. You know, in some cases. So the companies that came out of that model have done quite well, you know, in the real world. So again, I think the point I was trying to make is corporate America is also adopting that startup weekend model. We have Coca-Cola as our main sponsor, and Coke recently did internal startup weekend for its staff. So,
really?
So what it is doing, corporation in the knowledge economy, they work in cubicles. They had certain roles, and if they crossed that line, they wouldn't fit in, you know. And I'm not talking about the Henry Ford days when people got fired for being efficient. I'm talking about, you know, right now, the corporations. So the corporations, they that's how the human resources are managed. So corporate entrepreneurship is great for corporations' overall productivity, as well as it's great for individual growth. And particularly in a part of my book, I've made a case that middle managers in big corporations, they can truly play a role of community managers, you know, just like in entrepreneurial clusters. So they can, you can probably relate to some of the things I'm saying in your early days, but I think the only job I had was as a middle manager right out of school, and which I hated it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that job for 2 years, and basically that was enough for me to see what to expect, you know.
Yeah, I've already figured this. I got this one figured out. Check.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And,
on to the next. I have a question for you. What in terms of, like, going back to the Coca-Cola story, did they come up, what would interest them in doing some type of corporate entrepreneurship? Or do you know what, can you tell us anything about what came out of that? Any of the ideas for businesses that came out of that?
Sure.
Do they have
sure.
an example?
And again, the you know, let me briefly talk about Startup America model. The Steve Case, founder of AOL, and Scott Case, founder of Priceline, they took the leadership for Startup America partnership. And when, you know, it was a 3-year charter, and, you know, we came up, we got involved in many initiatives like Jobs Act. It's something we're passionately involved in. So a lot of broader kind of strategic initiatives, but Startup Weekend was more kind of grassroots operation. So when we merged, the Coke was the founding sponsor. So basically,
okay.
So what happened was, you know, Coke is taking this very seriously. Startup America was only within the United States. Startup Weekend was already, like I said, in so many countries, and just like Coca-Cola, you know, Coca-Cola is all over the world. I mean, it's the biggest brand out there. So I think with the Startup Weekend kind of initiative, they're bringing inside the corporation. They are kind of letting their employees loose in terms of having them think conceptually, you know, it's not only for, let's say, marketing people at Coke to come up with ideas how to display their products.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an accountant would have an
might
idea.
Might have some ideas.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, in theory, we learned that in business schools for years. But in practice, you know, in practice, the big
corporation, in practice, trying to put it into practice is a whole other story across those silos that still exist.
Yeah, and Startup Weekend model is more kind of, it's not dictating people what to do, it's kind of empowering them, you know. So, and that's the powerful model, I think.
Okay, so you know, we mentioned, I'm going to go back to your background in engineering, art, and management. So there's a unique perspective that you bring, and you say that understanding customer needs has become more of an art than a science. Can you just give me a little bit on that?
Sure. What I was trying to say was basically you know, customers have more choice these days. You know, if you're a customer, you can buy
do they ever?
From all over the place, right? You can buy online, you can go to stores. So basically, it's the pull economy versus the push economy in the past. So when customers have choices and they can pull what they want specifically, the enterprises, the corporations have, you know, they have to be more creative to reach out to them. And customers these days they're influenced by how the products look,
No more ugly products.
Exactly.
I will buy women. You know, women are big consumers. We're huge consumers. We pretty much are the main driver of things in families.
Exactly.
We won't buy stuff that's ugly.
and back to, you know, I'm going back and forth. You know, one thing you realize when you write a book is kind of you have so many cases in mind. So it takes a little bit of while to get it out there. But again, customers are still, you know, everything. You know, without customers, you didn't have a business. Peter Drucker back in the day, it was relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it's relevant now, right? So the whole idea is customers kind of decide your business. So you really have to know where they're coming from, right, what they want. You know, when they're pulling products and services they like and they need in such a specific way.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Provider,
pulling? What do you mean by pulling? What do you mean by pulling?
Pulling meaning, a simple example would be print advertisement versus Google. You kind of go on Google and look for a specific product. Pooling meaning you go and look for specific things.
What
you
I
need.
Want. I'm going to look for what I want, and I'm pulling it to me.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
okay.
That's the kind of lingo they use. Pull versus push. Push
mm-hmm.
would be in the knowledge economy, and still it's a lot of big companies do that. But kind of. You put an ad out there, or you know, you take a full print ad on New York Times, and kind of you are
pushing
you're
what you have on people.
People who see that would kind of be the right market, and they would eventually buy your product, right? So,
right.
So that's a long shot. So now with the advent of new technology and
smartphones and all these things,
exactly,
that we have at
our disposal. And you have more choices to kind of pull what you need. And then, as a vendor, as a service provider, you got to understand where your customers are, right? So that's what I meant by kind of pulling, And that design aspect could be, you know, if you have a product you're selling, it's very important to kind of, you know, you could very well have a really good product, but if you fail to package in such a way that,
that people can see
your product gets traction, then
mm-hmm.
kind of nobody will see your product, right? So. Mm-hmm. So art is very relevant. Design aspect is very relevant, so that's where I'm coming from.
So knowing, like, what would drive you though? But engineering, art, and management is such a unique combo, because engineering is very precise, but it's almost artistic, and then art is, of course, you know, one of the social sciences, and then management became a science for a while. I just think that's a really interesting background. And so what do you think, like, you have a background that allows you to see conceptually, like that's your training, that's your bent, that's your perspective automatically because of who you are and just probably, you know, the things that you've learned and been taught. I'm just thinking, how can entrepreneurs evolve to capitalize on this? What must we do to capitalize on the conceptual economy? What must we be doing that maybe we're not doing right now? What has to happen?
Thank you. I mean, in hindsight, I'd like to claim that I knew what I was doing.
Right.
I did not. You know, I was basically But I have to share this story, kind of shaped my entrepreneurial career late in the day. When I was junior at Pittsburgh State, I was an engineering student. They're a number one polymer program. I got my internship, summer internship, working for Chrysler. And I spent 60 days there, and I came up with a solution that saved Chrysler over $30
million.
And
did you get a piece of that?
My work was published back then, and I was 19, 20-year-old kid.
Did you get some of the money?
I beg your pardon?
Did you get some of the money?
Oh, no, I didn't. That's what drove me to be an entrepreneur.
Okay, there you go.
No, basically what happened
was...
Come on,
it could have cost you $1 million. It wouldn't have hurt them.
Well, I got, I got five different job offers, all the big
corporations. There you go. Okay.
And again, I think more than anything else, I mentioned in my book the entrepreneurial process I used to come up with solution versus there were hundreds of engineers working on this issue. It was a recall, probably one of the largest recalls going on in 96. It was a Jeep Grand Cherokee. The internal door panels were peeling off, you know, brand new cars, right out of the production lot. These door panels were peeling off, and you know, the production line was not shut down. So 1,400 cars every day coming out of the lot.
We're coming off with this defect.
Exactly, and like 8, 9, 10% of defects. And it was a huge problem. So when I got there, it's already 3 months into the mess. My boss, supposed to be mentoring me as an intern, didn't have time for me. So I was pretty much let loose in the corporate environment. The good thing was they gave me all the tools I needed. They gave me access to anywhere I wanted to go. And basically, you know, on my own time and during office hours, I came up with a solution that instead of changing the whole door, just replacing that defected part. And the difference was the door was costing $230 versus my solution was $50. So,
wow.
So within 2 days, I tested my product. It was validated at dealerships and corporate upper management. The Chrysler upper management, they implemented right away. So around the world, they used my solution.
That's amazing.
And that really opened up doors for me. And, you know, still... And again, I my corporate entrepreneurship kind of motivation came from my days, summer I spent in, you know, in the motor town, you know, more kind of... I mean, that kind of changed my perspective, you know. I mean, before then, you know, my family were doctors and engineers, so I was, you know, I didn't have a concept of being an entrepreneur.
Right.
But at the same time, I thought basically, if you're an intern and you know, you have hundreds of engineers working a problem, kind of using old traditional ways, and you know, and as a corporate entrepreneur, you could think things differently, you know. And that kind of shrunk the cycle, you know, production cycle. That kind of defied the status quo, the way things were being done. So and that's true in the entrepreneurial career, you know, basically.
Well,
you didn't have
thinking.
All the resources you need. You know, sometimes you're wearing a lot of hats, and being resourceful is going to be the key, and it has always been a key factor for me to get things done, you know.
Well, you know, we got about 5 minutes left. I cannot believe it's been this long. The time is flying by. I want to find out, what are your plans for your work around the conceptual economy? Is there something you're working on now you'd like to share with anybody who's going to listen to this or who's listening, you know, about your work? What's next for the conceptual economy? What do you plan to do something to actually further the concept of the conceptual economy?
Sure, absolutely. Like I said, I, you know, have interest in several companies. Two initiatives I've started a few years back. One is Explore Nano. It's the world of nanotechnology. I am in the forefront. We are kind of in the state of Nevada here, working throughout the state. We're trying to start the initiative out of here. I have different initiatives. Explore Nano. We have Explore Biomed, the health sciences-based companies. We are launching and we're creating a platform using conceptual thinking that I practice every day. Mm-hmm. So. I'm pretty active on Twitter.
I was going to say, if people want to get in touch with you, or what's the best way to, pitch you some type of a concept or something? You know, I don't know. Do you like Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
My main Twitter handle is 4Entrepreneur. That's the number 4Entrepreneur. I have Explore Nano. That's for the nanotechnology.
Okay.
The initiative I just talked about. That's Explore Nano. ExploreNano.
Mm-hmm.
And I have another one, Explore Biomed. But if you go on my main Twitter handle, 4Entrepreneur,
you'll see all of that.
Yeah, and then I also have Startup Nevada, the Start America Partnership Initiative, and I know I have a few things going on, but I'm always. You know, the fascinating part is I get to meet a lot of really cool entrepreneurs, great ideas, and collaboration, and being able to work with large pools of people conceptually will be very important. So
it's like being on crack almost, but idea crack.
Entrepreneurship, that's the...
Yeah, entrepreneurship.
You know. But again,
I mean,
from a big picture, I think... if you follow certain new, not norms, but certain new ways of doing things, it'll make life easier a little bit, you know.
So the book is called Winning Lessons for Entrepreneurs in the Conceptual Economy, and can we get it at the usual places, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, those types of places?
Yeah, it's out at Barnes & Noble. It's out on Amazon. We went through Ingram Distributors, so it's available throughout the world, different channels.
Mm-hmm.
So almost every region has online outlets. They can get a copy, or they can maybe DM me or tweet me or email to me.
Uh-huh.
I can send them a copy as well.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, Jay, you know what? It's been really great. It's been great learning from you. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm a curious, fascinated human being. I'm definitely an entrepreneur, and I really focus on women entrepreneurs, and I think women are very innovative. They're just more perfectionistic. So I'm going to make sure that everybody in my circle hears this interview to, you know, maybe free their mind to be more conceptual. Like, women are already conceptual, and it's okay to be that way. And, you know, there's ways that they can harness that. So thank you so much for coming today and taking time out of your busy schedule to visit with me and have a conversation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Michelle. I really appreciate it.
All right. All right, everybody. You've been listening to the Online Thought Leader Salon, where our mantra is connectivity is the new currency. I will talk to you next time. Goodbye for now.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.